Surprise! It's the SARPcast. We've got another surprise guest this week, continuing from last week on today's Surprise Sunday show. As always, I'm your host, the ever-lovable, also-huggable, six-shooter of love, Revolver. And with me today, in the red corner, weighing in at 888 posts, holder of the Grandmaster Roleplayer title, the Fondler of Fuda, the Deviant of Delinquency, you know him, you hate him, it's Doc Tomo!
Boo! Oh, yeah, it's me. It's me. Hey, guys.
Doc's been here with the site since the Sakura's second mission. He's the FM of the Loreth, and he's setting consultant and a player on the Maris. All in all, he doesn't seem to do a whole lot in the site, so join me in asking why the heck we even have this guy on here. Welcome to the show, Doc.
Oh, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
It should be good. This week on the SARPcast, we will be talking about the lame Elysian ripoffs, the Loreth, and the style of roleplay that everyone really comes to the site for, I know, which is PvP. Mm-hmm. And Doc's going to give us a little primer on that. Additionally, we have a new segment this week for you listeners, added onto the list of surprises, surprising surprises this week. We'll talk about that more later in the show, because first up, as always, new news. Current events. The newest news that we have is longtime SARP member Yoroko has quit the site forever. I'm sorry. We'll miss you, Yoroko.
That's a shame.
Other news, former site mod Andrew has returned, bringing back some new players for his reascension to the FM ship of the UOC, which had previously been dwindling. I think last week we talked about there was a little upsurge in interest, and it looks like Andrew is back. If you take a look at the newly updated space map, it looks like the NMX are making a bid for the Ketsururi military sector, and so we'll see how that plays out. And I also urge any player that can see the changing room topic and hasn't posted in it, I highly urge you to do so. After last week's very amazing show, Doshi has been putting together an actual real plot for the hot tub. And from what tidbits I've been able to glean from what he said, it looks like it's going to be something that'll be really cool. And so post in the changing room topic if you guys want to take part. And if you read the changing room topic, if you can see it, you'll know why. Finally, last news. Longtime SARP member Yoroko has come back to the site after quitting it forever. We love you, Yoroko. Welcome back.
Welcome back, man! About that hot tub thing, pretty nice, huh?
I'm actually really excited. Like I said, he's been talking to me a little bit about it on the down low, and it's not going to be an excuse to do hot tub things, but it'll actually be a real plot. Let me say already that right now we have more bottoms than tops, and that's proving to be a problem.
Sounds like you're going to be needing some dominant people in there.
We do. So if you guys are into that, any listeners who are hot tub aware and interested in that kind of thing, please, like I said, post in the changing room topic. Don't be afraid.
As it says in the big letters, there is no shame.
Right now, Doc, I'll be honest, I feel a lot of shame. Feel a lot of shame because you're on the show.
It happens. I have that effect on people.
All right, let's move into our discussion topics for the week. First topic is the Loreth, the second winged humanoid race in SARP. It's the brainchild of Tiff, a.k.a. Midori and Doc. The Loreth are actually a lot more unique in the SARP than most players realize, and I think than a lot of people give them credit for. But we've got Doc here who's going to tell us a little bit about it. So first up, why don't you tell us about how the Loreth came to be in an OOC sense, like out of character? How did brought about their creation?
Well, the thing that started them was Tiff had a notion one day. Just one day she said, well, hey, Timo, how about we make a race for the SRP? And I'm like, okay, well, tell me your idea. So she starts pitching this idea of a very drow-like race, right? Wow. You know, the elves with the dark skin and usually the big knockers, right? And So I'm like, you know, Drow is nice and everything, but it's so overdone. How about you turn on the negative image, go for the pale skin? And she's like, oh, well, that sounds like a good idea. And we kept tinkering with the thing, right? And eventually, wings came up as a vestigial portion of them, as a sign of their past, much more flourishing heritage and such.
Above ground heritage?
Yes, above ground heritage. Before, they were the flying types, a lot like, well, I hate to say it, a lot like the Elysians, and it came to that kind of thing. But after a bit of discussion and whatnot with Tiff, we said, oh, well, we'll make the wings vestigial, and we're going to have them have a tragic history. And, well, all the OOC planning went by, and then eventually we realized, oh, who are these Elysians we forgot to read about?
You guys hadn't looked into the Elysians before that?
No, we hadn't. We were around the site for only about a few months. And, yeah, so a few months. Kind of embarrassing, but we see it and we're like, oh, well, let's just ignore them. They haven't done anything lately. We'll ignore them and hope they go away.
So they weren't really an active part of the site at the time when you joined.
Not in the slightest, actually. This is before Zach Galway, you know, the British guy going to Cambridge, I think, or Oxford, one of the two. Well, anyway, before he grabbed them again and started to push them along, and Wes pretty much, you know, turned a blind eye to them. They were the conquered race sitting over there above Niflheslia.
Oh, okay.
Nobody cared.
And it wasn't like there was really a wiki in those days to kind of read up on the setting.
Yeah, so it was kind of difficult. Back then, everything was done in this HTML format where we have all these different pages that you hop around to. And there were a lot of things hidden deep inside of a page within a page within a page.
Gotcha.
So if you really wanted to know the site, you really had to go through the index page by page by page.
I can see why that might be a little difficult.
Yeah.
Well, the Loreth have some different castes to their system, the way they their society is set up. You want to tell us a little bit about how they're split up like that?
Well, all right. There's four castes. There is what used to be known as the Chieftains, now known as the New Terlista. And I'll get into why the names changed at a later point of our discussion. Then there's the Fionnan, which are the burly warrior women and thinner, scrawnier men of the Loreth. Uh-huh. There are the Lamanel, which are a shamanistic and druid-like race. Caste. They're almost like a sub-race, really, the caste.
And it's kind of like druidish in the D&D sense, too, right? Where they can, like, turn into animals or something, right?
Yeah, they can shapeshift partially. They have a certain quality to their capability to change around organ function and such. But I will touch on that some more in a moment. And then there's the royalty caste, the Terlistans, which started out being just Tiff and I playing Velor and Haraki. And
which are the royalty of the Loreth?
Yes, the crown queen and the high prince. Not high prince, high priest. Silly me. But I was thinking of Sarissa's character, the prince. But, yeah. So those are the four castes. Mm-hmm. Now, about each one of them, it gets pretty interesting. The Chieftains were once part of the Loreth. Now they're known as the New Terlistans. They were developed as the elders, the information keepers, the people who did the scientific things, and also kept an eye on all of the knowledge of the race.
Uh-huh.
They were the eyes, the ears, and the brain.
The lore keepers.
Yes, the lore keepers.
The lore keepers.
Yeah, the lore keepers. That's right. Now, they started out mostly as that in their development. Mm-hmm. Speaking of development, I'm a little bit out of order here. They were developed, actually, as a response to their imprisonment underground done by the Palatio, which are now slaves, but they were once a prominent race. And when the Lorath were imprisoned underground, they had to divide their resources.
So the Halatio used to be the dominant race on Lor?
They became the dominant race after a war caused by a famine, of all things,
mm-hmm.
Which they blamed on the Lorath. It was like a witch hunt of sorts.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like, hey, look at them there winged people. Let's throw them in a cave. But yeah. So
I guess they're really different than they are today, then.
They are. They were a very tribal society then, and they continued it. And they never did develop past the tribal stage. So when the Lorath came out of the ground with this perfectly organized caste-based system and knowledge of the past and knowing exactly what they were coming out to fight, the Halatio had no chance because the Lorath just ambushed them from below.
Gotcha.
It was beautiful. But about the caste again, I got my horse before the cart, or cart before the horse. Well, anyway, so
okay.
The Chieftains grew into a greater thing when they hit the above ground. They started developing cybernetic implants, and their value in regard to keeping track of knowledge skyrocketed once the Lorath started to tap into the sciences. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in them becoming a far greater information base in that regard, and also to keep the peace within Lorath society. They became the sort of CIA, KGB, and FBI of the Lorath race.
So I can definitely see where they would want to become the new Torlistians, who were the ruling race. Because basically they kind of ruled the Lorath with this knowledge, right? Or they saw that they had, you know, some sort of superiority because of it.
Actually, it's the exact opposite, believe it or not. The interesting thing is that an event transpired which caused a small civil war, very small. It was more of like a civil battle more than anything,
mm-hmm.
where the Chieftains decided to split away from the Lorath race. And those who remained loyal to the royalty were dubbed as new Torlistians as a sign of their respect for the royal family.
I gotcha.
And the rest of the species.
I gotcha.
Now, the Chieftains who split off are actually considered mortal enemies to the matriarchy because of their flagrant disrespect and the fact that they actually murdered several battalions of Faiyunin warriors. And that brings us to the Faiyunin, actually.
All right.
Now, the Faiyunin are the primary war bringers of the Lorath race.
Mm-hmm.
If the Ochistans could be compared to Yamataeans, then the Faiyunin can be compared to the NH-17. Because the Faiyunin...
I don't see necessarily where you're going with that, but all right.
Well, Yamataeans are a civilian. The NH-17 is a warfighter.
Oh, okay.
Well, the Faiyunin were bred underground alongside the other castes, but they were focused on sustaining certain traits such as large muscle mass, larger stature, problem-solving with their minds better, things like that. They were focused in the breeding stages to be the ideal combatant.
All right.
That was their role. Due to the matriarchy's favoring of females being dominant, the Faiyunin caste was developed to have the females as the larger of the genders, the stronger, the more enhanced. Faiyunin males, which you hear about very rarely, are actually very comparable to the Yamataeyan male. They're thinner, more nimble. They tend to do more of the thinking and less of the fighting. They're very supportive in the social setting. They're a lot like housewives. which could lead to some very funny and very interesting RMP if it ever does.
If one is so inclined, you might say.
Yeah, if one is so inclined. Yeah. And to interest some individuals, they can have a very trappish figure.
Oh. That is...
yeah.
You're real subtle there, Doc. You're real subtle. Subtlety is your middle name.
Oh, I know. It's just great. I just got to sneak up on you. The only way I could sneak up on you better is if I had a box or something.
That's
the
so
exclamation
bad.
Point popping up over your head aside.
Let me just say, your jokes are a lot more funnier in the pre-show than they are in the actual show.
Oh, I know. It's great, isn't it?
All right.
I used up all my material on you before.
That maybe that's it. Let's get back to the info dump.
Okay.
The royalty, the Turlistans.
Actually, you're skipping one. Lamanel.
Oh, you're right. I did. I skipped the Lamanel. Yeah.
The shamanistic Lamanel. Now, see, there's some funny stuff behind that.
So, one of the problems that I found when making a Lorath was that not only was a lot of the information not like was really hard to find on the wiki. It was really sparse. Was that there wasn't a whole lot of explanation on the Lamanel about this ability that they have.
Well, the funny thing is we did have it explained before in the original forum post back in ye olden day.
Uh-huh.
And well, it was lost in the shifting between boards and such, and we had to redo it, and it was pretty slim. And then eventually the responsibility fell on Tyler, who was in charge of the Lamanel, because it is hard to control an entire multicast race, so we distributed it.
Oh, I did not know that about Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler was in charge of the Lamanel. He played a character called Notan, and he was a wolf-bonded Lamanel. The Fionin had Chris, Cora, you know, uh-huh. as their leader at the time. And the Ochistans in proper, before the New Turlistan split, were led by Vesper.
Oh, okay.
Just
wow, this is all new information to me. This is all really interesting.
Yeah, it is actually some stuff that you needed to be around to know. Well, see, here's the thing. Tyler had the job, and well, we all know Tyler. I'll leave it at that.
Well, you know, I'll speak in the guy's defense. He is, because unfortunately he's without internet still.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know anyone else that I can talk to and knows more about SARP.
Well, yeah, he does have that long staying power there.
Well, but he retains it too. It's not like he's just been around. He's been around and it blows my mind sometimes with the amount of knowledge that guy knows offhand without looking it up about not the history of the site itself, but the background, the in-character background. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's why I grabbed him for the job, actually. He was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Well, the point is, the thing about the shape-shifting was that originally, it was written to be a magic intro.
Oh, okay.
This is way back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, originally, the Lamanel were intended to call forth the spirits of nature and bring down lightning to smite their enemies and things like that.
You know, when you say it like that, it doesn't give me a whole lot of... It doesn't sound like you've got a whole lot of faith in your own people here.
It was back in the day. It was way back in the day.
All right.
But, see, then, as we're halfway through getting done with submitting the Lorath, Wes says, okay, no more magic. And we're like, wait, what are we going to do with these guys? They were supposed to be the ones that slung the magic. And I pulled into my thinking here, and I said to myself, all right, I'll have to think of a scientific way to explain shamanistic shape-shifting. So
instead of just dropping them as a cast or reworking them?
Yeah, well, we reworked them a little, but I said, you know what, they needed something special, and I gave it to them. I decided to write up the shape-shifting as a sort of psychological bonding. That's the first point of the shape-shifting. They need to be...
Yeah, that part actually persists on the wiki. I can remember reading that.
Yeah, but the scientific reasoning behind it is that they use their mental focus to actually manually instruct their body to produce larger sums of certain cells, structures, tissues to be redistributed manually.
I think you were doing better with magic. That sounds pretty ridiculous.
Well, it's largely a mind over matter thing. And
but
also,
it's not like the Loreth have bodies like, say, the Yamataeans, where they don't have, you know, they're not real people. They're just collections of nanomachines.
Well, the other issue is it was also bred into them for 5,000 years.
Yeah, but that's not just something you can breed into people.
Well, with genetic augmentation as well, there was a decent sum of introducing
see. Yeah. The Aroma have a lot of that in their backstory about genetic modifications, and
fucked up. It's partially why the four different castes are so different between each other, because they each had a bit more tweaking than the other in certain regards. But the Lamanel were actually intended to be the balance between the Ochistans and the Fayunan. Mm-hmm. The balance between the mind-focused Ochistan and the body-focused Fayunan. The Lamanel were actually intended to be the religious sect of the Lorath, mm-hmm. and also as the keepers of domestic and in-planet issues, such as keeping track of the Halatio, for example, handling cattle, wildlife preservation, making sure that civil unrest remained under control, things like that. They were basically the secretaries of the interior, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Well, that actually begs an interesting question, is in terms of character submissions, where do you see the lines being drawn between castes?
Well, what I envision is that Fayunin focus on the combat arms role.
No, I mean, with what you've seen, that people who've already made Lorath characters, do most people tend to make a set? Like, do you find that there's not a lot of people who play Lamniel, for instance, and thus that balance isn't really made in character? Where are the demographics showing up?
Well, most people focus on the Fayunin, actually, because Fayunin are the warriors, and they seem to get all the fame. A lot of the long-timers that have been around have liked the Lamanel, though. Okay. For their balanced approach. And the people who often visit the tech forum, actually, tend to make Ochistans. But due to the slower influx of players I've had recently, it's hard to actually come up with a genuine demographic representation. But there has been a rather balanced representation between the different casts. Yeah, okay. Which I'm rather happy about.
Well, that does definitely seem to be a positive.
Yeah. Where were we? The Trillistans, that's right.
Yep. Now we're at the Trillistans.
The royalty. The royalty was developed by very selective breeding, which produced hybridization. Ah, you get it now. You get it.
Well, I mean... And that's me basically being in the know, being able to laugh at when you use the term selective breeding.
It's
amazing that they're not all retarded, but...
Well, I'll touch on that in just a second.
Maybe they are.
Well,
all right, let's inform our listeners here of what's going on.
The Trillistans, were bred to have a percentage of the representation of each caste. A portion of the Faiyunin strength, a portion of the Ochistan mental abilities. Oh, I did forget to mention, Ochistans are tactile telepaths. They touch and convey telepathic capabilities.
I did not realize that.
I forgot about it. It just
is that on is that on the wiki?
That is on the wiki.
Oh, well, and I must have missed that because I did not know that.
Yes. Wait. Ah, that's a problem. That's a problem. There is no Ochistan section because I haven't gone around to it again.
So it wasn't. See? What I was telling you earlier about my confusions on the Ochistans, that's probably why.
That could be why. That is actually
You should
why.
Put that on your to-do list.
Actually, I'll write it down right this second.
I can hear you fumbling with your paper.
Yeah.
This is interesting radio right here, folks. It's better than dead air. It's listening to people rustle with their paper.
Oh, I know. It's beautiful, isn't it? Okay. I got run down there.
Okay.
All right. As I was saying.
That was my, by the way, that was my real reason for letting you on the show today, is just to bug you to write Lorath Wiki articles.
Oh, that's great. I love it. I love it. I need this motivation. I have like 60-some ship interior articles to write.
And see, that I think is also one of the big problems with the Lorath and why you don't get a whole lot more players is that you are focused a whole lot on the technology articles and coming up with new things while the older stuff... and this is a problem with a couple of the older other older races too on the site, is that the old stuff and the stuff that new people will see first when making their decision on what they're going to play and seeing how how active things are for a certain thing based on the number of articles and how well the wiki articles are put together for the race. And that's one of the problems that the Lorath have, is that their base articles are lacking so much that I think that's why you don't get a whole lot of players.
Mm. Well, we mostly relied back on the day on the old character creation guide back in the HTML format before West changed it over. And we did actually have all these issues spread out throughout the pages upon pages that you had to go through.
I remember when I first joined the site, it was still with the HTML character generation. And yeah, it was a pain in the butt.
Yeah,
it's much better that we have the wiki nowadays.
Yeah, well, during the changeover, we did lose a large sum of our information. We did have that down, but yeah, it kind of went whoosh, and we have to piece together occasionally, because since we've been having the Lorath part of the SRP for so long, there are some pieces which get lost in the translation.
In the translation, it gets lost in the, you guys need to either find the stuff or rewrite it, is really what it comes
exactly.
to.
And it's hard to keep track of what's missing because you don't know that's missing until somebody's looking for it.
Yeah, I guess I can give you that, but you just have to take it, pretend like you're a new person and look through the articles. Only go to other articles if you can click a link to get to that, from the article you're on to get to that article.
That's for sure. Okay, Tristan's, where was...
So, do you want to talk a little bit more about why the Ochistans split from the Lorath?
Ah, yes, about that. Well, a while back, I think it was Sakura Mission 6 or 5. I don't recall. But one day, the Sakura shows up at Lore and says, "Hey, we'd like to take shore leave here and repair our ship and generally, settle down for a little bit," right?
Now, because I'm self-admittedly not the best at keeping track of history on SARP, is this when Hanako was in control?
Yes.
Was Yui still?
This was... Hanako was on the ship, controlling the ship.
She was the captain? Okay.
She was the captain.
All right. Because I know Hanako
captain,
has...
my captain.
Because I know Hanako has a thing for Lorath wine.
And
I'm wondering if this is where this came from.
She has a thing for other Lorath things, and I'll have to touch on that right now. Well, they came on planet, and they were given a tour, they being the Sakura crew. Mm-hmm. They were given a tour of the Royal Palace, and generally it was, hey, Mikasa is Tsukasa, yeah? But they come in, they settle down, and eventually, during the first night of the stay, Hinako ends up in the queen's bedchamber.
So it's not just Mikasa, Tsukasa, it's like Mi Pinocha es Su Pinocha.
Well, here's the problem with that. The problem is, at the time, the Lorath Queen was a virgin. Very much a virgin. She was not educated in interpersonal sexual relations. She was sheltered through much of her life. Now, Hinako shows up and is the exact opposite. Obviously, right?
From the tales I've heard.
Yeah, from the tales we've all heard. But, Chrome Eggs aside.
Chrome Eggs are my favorite thing about SARP. I will not lie.
Yes. Well, Hinako makes her move. And she takes advantage of the Lorath Queen, because the Lorath Queen doesn't even know what the hell's happening. Mm-hmm. And while she basically takes...
So let's move the story on a little faster here. So what did this do that sparked some split between the Ochistans and the Turlista?
Well, as I explained earlier, the Ochistans were in charge of information keeping.
Uh-huh.
And basically, Ceiling Cat is watching you deflower the queen.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the Ochistans knew.
Okay.
And at the same time, the Lorath High Priest knew the Ochistans knew. And he ordered that the information be suppressed.
Uh-huh.
Because he did not want the Lorath to lose face. He did not want the queen to look like...
That makes sense.
Yeah, he didn't want the queen to look like a harlot. And he also did not want it to look like the Lorath people were being openly molested by the Yamataian people. It would be bad publicity.
Okay, so the high priest wanted the information suppressed.
So he dispatches a group of Fayunin to handle it. Basically, detain, arrest, and inquire. And basically make sure that they didn't contact anybody with information. Well...
So it's a little more than just suppressing the information.
Well, it was purely suppressing. No murders were to be made. But the Ochistans took this as a great offense. And there were orbital strikes made against the Fayunin, which were moving in on Ochistan positions. And so... Wow. A small civil war escalated.
That's a lot. Wow.
Yeah. So it was a overreaction on overreaction on overreaction. And so it ends up...
Overreaction, that never happens on SARP.
Yeah. Well, it ends up being that the matriarchy finally says, hey, screw you guys, we're going to genocide you if you keep this up.
Whoa. That. That's the ultimate no reactions right there.
Yeah, well, just as things are about to hit the fan, Hinako decides to take responsibility. A responsibility from Hinako, right? And asks that the royalty and the various caste leaders go to the Sakura and talk this over. Well,
just the ridiculousness of I don't know. I guess you had to be there, but it sounds like if the person who caused the whole problem is doing this, there's going to be some assassination attempt or something. Like,
yeah, this really screams Archduke Ferdinand, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's see. They get to the ship, and they're like, you know what? Screw you guys. Basically, communication breaks down. They don't give a shit anymore.
They who?
They, as in all parties involved, pretty much. Everybody says, hey.
The Lorath side?
The Lorath side.
Okay.
Mostly the Ochistans, though. They were fed up. And the chieftains said, okay, we're going to split off now. We don't want to deal with this. We don't want to be part of your matriarchy anymore. And behold, they reveal that they ordered and procured a number of Yamataian ships using matriarchy funds. And so a fleet of about 200 some odd ships. Yamataian ships, the old models, the models with the planet-popping aether cannons as a third weapon, and the shields that could sit in suns, and the armor plate, which you could only harm with aether or antimatter.
Gotcha.
Back in ye olden day. So, these ships appear, and the matriarchy's like, hey, Princess Ketsurui, can you order some ships over here to quell this uprising? They're uprising against not only us, but your empire, because the matriarchy was part of the Yamataian Empire at the time.
Oh, okay.
And what Hanako says is, I can't help you. So the matriarchy's like, okay, so what now? And we let him go. The matriarchy says, okay, that's it, go. But you are our enemies from now on. And so the chieftains leave. Now, with that, the Lorath have the Ochistans, which decided to remain loyal, which became the new
Neutralistans.
Yeah, the Ochistans, yeah, the Neutralistans, and that led to that.
So in today's SARP, where are the Ochistans, the original Ochistans?
The original Ochistans. Well, see, that's a little bit of a tricky pickle, because Vesper came back, and then he left, and then he came back, and then he left, and then he came back. You know, that's Vesper, right?
Well, it sounds like a lot of people on the site.
Yeah, well, the general consensus is this. You know the ominous green nebula on the map?
I'd have to take another look
at
it.
Well, basically, between 60 and 80 light years from Yamatai, northward, and a little bit to the right.
So around where the Abwerans and the...
A bit above the Abwerans, to the far right of the Aroma.
Oh, the ominous green nebula. I see. Okay.
Yeah. Now see...
How ominous.
Yeah, very ominous. Those 5 points of stars that formed a loose W there would be where the Ochistans should be now. I do have to talk...
South of the Green Nebula.
Yeah, south of the Green Nebula.
Gotcha.
I do actually have to talk this over with X-Hack a bit, because he has some plans for the area. But
I think
that's
his plans are more on the left side of the map, but...
Yeah, but it's
It's definitely things that GMs or FMs need to talk about when things get close to each other.
Yeah, well, recently the Lorath have been intending to make a move against Ochistans, but unfortunately due to Vesper's coming and going state...
Well, and they're also probably... Because the Lorath are right now part of the UOC, right?
Well, a protectorate of the UOC. The LSDF, the Lorath Self-Defense Force, is a separate military entity, which is under the direct command of the Lorath Matriarchy and not the UOC. If the Matriarchy fancies to go to war with someone, they're going to go to war with someone. And in this case, it will be their blood enemies, so chieftains.
Is there going to be any conflict, though, between the UOC, who are sort of the peacekeepers, the self-appointed peacekeepers of the universe, and the Lorath Matriarchy, if they do go to war with the Ochistans?
It's been classified as domestic matter at this point.
All right.
Basically, the Lorath are handling their own issues. So it's of no concern to the UOC yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's that with Ochistans.
All right, well, let's... that was actually really informative of a lot of different things about the Lorath. And the listeners who are interested, well, I definitely suggest the Lorath are really interesting, and they've obviously got a lot of political intrigue within their own system that you don't see a whole lot in other races on SARP. There is some of it in some of them. I'm not saying it's nowhere else, but it's definitely something that's pretty interesting. And I hope you get those wiki articles fixed up and we start seeing a whole lot more Lorath players.
It's on my to-do list, most definitely.
All right. Well, let's move on to our second topic this week, which is something that I don't personally do a whole lot of on the site. And thankfully, Doc here has been gracious enough to educate me and any other listeners out there who are also as confused about this portion of the Star community, which is player versus player.
Well, it's my pleasure to talk about this.
And I want to start off by saying that one of the things that really confuses me about the whole PvP aspect on a site such as ours is that it seems to me that you would have to either have a moderator or come to some sort of arrangement beforehand on the outcome of any PvP, you know, type encounter, because otherwise it just seems like it would be a lot of, you know, oh, you shot me, no, I was wearing a bulletproof vest, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that does sound like a little bit of something I saw in South Park once with the Bosnians, if you know that one.
No, I don't think I actually caught that episode, but I mean, I can see some of that in Sarp's past. You know, you were talking about the olden days ships of being, you know, oh, we've got shields that let us sit in suns and...
Yeah, that was a bit tricky. It's part of the reason why my technology had to escalate so far.
Well,
but
isn't that what's created a lot of the problems in today's problems in the tech forums and the split between players and factions who feel like, isn't that what PvP has kind of done to the site, like that sort of PvP has done to the site?
Well, it's a bit of a problem, yes, but at the same time, we do have to realize that SARP is a science fiction role play, and the primary crutch of science fiction in regard to the entire genre is technology. That's what makes science fiction above all else. And to establish a setting, you need props. And that's going to require a lot of technological submissions.
Well, granted, but what does that have to do with the conflict that arises? How does PvP work? I mean, really what it seems like we've got a situation on Star Army is that we have a moderator at the top, an administrator,
okay.
Right? And, you know, there is a faction that is his. And
right.
How does, I mean, when the top guy, like, how do you have a balanced PvP?
Okay.
This is one thing I've you know, what one of the reasons why I haven't gotten to any sort of PvP type stuff on SARP is because how do you have a fair and balanced system when you do have one guy at the top who's part of, you know, who's part of one single faction? And it seems like if you'd play any other faction in a PvP sense, that you'd be on the shit end of the stick.
Well, all right, I'll explain this. There are various forms of PvP which can be used. There's the situational PvP. Let's say you're RPing a scene with another faction, and you throw down the gauntlet and say, hey, I'm going to mess you up.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's where you're going to have to either come to agreement with the other player or the other GM and say, this is what we're going to do. And are you willing to make these sacrifices if this doesn't go well?
But you say, if this doesn't go well, shouldn't you predetermine the outcome?
Not necessarily.
Come to an agreement beforehand?
Not necessarily, because that does interfere with if you have players that are beneath the GMs that are discussing this, because the players have to make an impact. If you make the decision beforehand for your players, that robs them of...
Oh, all right, I'm talking about the situational thing where you're involved in an active RP. I mean...
Yeah, well, there are larger scenes where there could be two plot ships interacting, which may have to shoot at each other. Or...
But then you'd still have to work out with the other GM what was going on, right?
Yeah, that's a given. Communication is key in PvP. It does take a level of maturity, though, to take part in PvP. Because I've once had a situation...
I would disagree that it does not take any maturity at all to engage in PvP. It takes maturity to do it well.
That's it. A while back, when I used to have a character on Sakura, Miles Gunn, he once squared off against NH18. No, wait. Yeah, it was an NH18 in a Mindy. And he was in a Kylie. Or Kyrie, or however you say it.
I believe it's a Kylie.
Yeah. The KEM31D. There we go. That's even easier, right?
But, oh, yeah, sure.
Well, anyway, the NH18 in the Mindy was being controlled by Fred. We all know Fred. You know, the one behind the Miharu. And he PMs me as we're RPing, saying, "All right, what are we going to do with this?" And I say, "Okay, I'm completely willing to fight to the death with my character. I'm cool with him dying. Are you willing to not take any cheap shots, no auto hits, and make sure to RP this to your best of your capabilities?" And he says, "Yeah." So we agreed that if it went bad, my character dies. If he does any cheap shots, the scene is going to be autoed out. Because, like, let's say...
Is this show just you airing your dirty laundry?
No.
Sarf? Like, no. Where are you going with this?
I'm going with... we agreed beforehand that things would go a certain way. And then, from that point, after we established the base rules between him and I, we RP'd the scene as the characters would do it. A very pure form of, there's no OOC pushing at it. It's just the IC, the pure in-character combat. And it produced a very beautiful scene of a simple Neplesian man fighting a marvel of technology one-on-one, head-on. It was a good scene.
All right.
Okay.
So what's the point here?
The point is, that's situational PvP. That requires a touch of communication between you and a GM or another player. Now, there's planned PvP, like you were talking about. There is the foreplanned, this is how it's going to go between the two factions. Do you agree, disagree, talk it over, hammer it out. I've done this before with the Neplesians, actually, when I was playing a Saint character, which was...
Helen?
Yeah. Which was sent to use a Mishu fleet, which was captured by the Yamataians, to produce a false war. Oh, wait. Insert joke here about hyperfolding into a nebula. Okay, joke time ended.
You lost me there on where the joke was.
Oh, just ask Sub later. He'll tell you all about it. God, it's embarrassing.
All right. What happened, though? All right, listeners, if I ask Sor and if it's interesting enough, you'll hear about it next week.
Okay. But point is, Sub and I discussed what we're going to be doing a little bit beforehand. And without communication, we ended up... screwing it up a bit. But after, we planned it out, and me and Mooney planned it out too, because Sub Rage. And, Mooney and I hammered out what we're going to do. There's going to be this many casualties. We're going to do this sort of means of discovering that the fake fleet is actually a fake, and this is going to be the outcome. We settled all of that beforehand, and then we typed it out. We presented it in the grand storytelling manner, which the SARP is known for. Now, the next form of PvP is the purely plot-driven format, where it's a plot device above all else. It's not meant to create tension. It's used to move the plot to a next given point, such as attack on a Neplesian ship in a given area to make the Neplesians have a reason to do a certain behavior or something. It's just a trigger. You know what I mean?
And we haven't been seeing that a whole lot lately. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, we haven't.
It seems like most people just sit in their area and, well, I guess we have the NMX stuff going on now.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's still, but that's not PvP. That's, the NMX are not a player run faction.
Yeah. It's pretty awkward to discuss NMX because there are a lot of people wanting to be players for the NMX lately.
Yeah, I've actually noticed some people talking about playing NMX, and as the acting FM, I don't know. There's been some lack of communication lately.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder about the whole thing, but
it would be.
I haven't really been putting forth the effort either. So
I understand that. I know the feeling.
Well, it comes from the fact that there's a reason why they don't have an actual FM, being is that the GMs are just doing what they'd like with it, and so there isn't a whole lot of. I mean, there's still some advisory stuff that I've been doing, but
yeah.
Anyways, but you're right. Yeah, there have been people that have expressed interest in playing Mishu, and it's kind of hard to figure out where you should really go with that.
Yeah. Now, see, that does raise a concern, though, because when you have people playing Mishu as a sort of representative of the race, it becomes a PvP situation.
See, I disagree, because you can have, given the, like, let's say I start a plot tomorrow, and I've got these people playing Mishu, or whatever, right? It's still not really PvP in the fact that anything that goes on in any other FM's, you know, space is something that's up to that FM still. Anything that plot would go, like let's say even that plot had the players interacting with with some of the events that have happened, you know, it's still not PvP because it's like I'm talking to whoever controls the planet we're going to be taking over, and you know it'll be a planet that I already know that they're giving up because we've been that's one of the things that I talk to the FMs about, you know, in terms of the NMX is for the most part what they're giving up is being under attack, and then you know at that point I would ask, you know, well, this is under attack, do you plan to take it back, or you know, is it going to be lost, you know, could I use it, or you know, you're going to give this planet up as lost, let me take it instead. That's not really PvP.
Well, see, the thing is, it becomes PvP when players become involved. That's where the player versus player terminology.
Yeah, but there's not players playing that other side. Just like the other FMs would be using NMX NPCs, basically, I would be using, you know, Yamatayan NPCs or Aroma NPCs or Juyin's NPCs or whatever.
But we also have to remember, a game master is little more than an over-glorified player.
Well, see, I disagree with you, and I know that there are people that play like that on the site, but a game master really should be separate from his or her played characters, in my opinion.
Yeah, that does create some issues there. But I recall once a while back, if you don't mind me going on an anecdote,
well, let's start to hear it. I'll stop you if I don't like it.
okay, that works. Well, a while back, I'll make it a brief one. A while back, Wes approaches me one day and says, hey, you want to help me out by controlling these Mishu ships that are going to be fighting the Sakura? And I say, sure thing. Give me the ground rules here. He tells me the ground rules. Basically, there's a few new guys. Don't blow up the ship. Don't kill all the new guys, right? And I said, okay, can I include Toshiro on this? Toshiro being a very active RPer back in the day before he left. And I think Doshi was involved, too, for a short duration of that. But, so yeah, he says, sure thing. So he entrusts me and these two guys with three Mishu ships. Two weaker ones and one big nasty, right?
Uh-huh.
And so Wes starts...
That's actually a Mishu ship class, the big nasty class.
Yeah. I don't recall, and I can't pronounce the name. So
no one can. Do not worry.
So we're just going to say Splogfer class, but... So he has the Sakura fly in, right? And start wailing on this supply depot that's held by the Mishu. And then that's when I say, okay, fine. He gave me the guidelines. Let's go with this. The end result was basically the samurai of the ship being captured and raped. Hinako being impregnated again. The new guys who managed to make ST copies getting iced. And the Sakura being infested by a large quantity of parasites, which had to be wiped out by a NH-28. You know, the NIWS, the Deus Ex Machina of all Nico. But, yeah. So, basically, the Sakura ended up defeated. We didn't plan ahead for the Sakura to be defeated. We didn't...
But at least Wes was, I guess, all right enough with it that he let it happen.
Yeah, we agreed beforehand that it's going to go however it's going to go. And that's when it becomes... player versus player. That's when it's not a pre-scripted event. It was something...
Well, sure. But, I mean, there's... That's someone being asked to come in. And either... If you are at odds with the other GM, which it sounds like you were... I meant in the in-character sense. The GM has a character, and you are at odds with the GM because you are acting against what the GM, you know, against a good result for that GM character.
A good end and bad end.
It's and I guess this is, you know, one of the reasons why I think that GM should be separate of any characters that they, you know. Because there's a difference between a GM. There's a difference between an NPC and a GMPC, and it's pretty obvious when they're, you know, what the difference is that a GMPC is treated just like any player, except since it's being run by the GM, they have preferential treatment.
Yeah, and the NPC just being like a coat rack.
But the difference between PvP and not PvP in that sort of situation is if you had been came in to be either an advisor or, you know, to run these guys, but you still answer to the GM, then you're not at odds with the GM. You're working for the GM, and that's I think the difference. And I really just don't see the positives to having it as a PvP in that instance, because you either the GM is going to give up control to the guys playing the bad guys, or, you know, the guy leading the guys playing the bad guys and saying, all right, you're now the GM, you're now the guy whose word, you know, says go. You know, or like I said, you're working for him in running these bad guys.
Well, there's a certain level of trust involved. That's where the forward planning comes in.
And that's why you two have such a great relationship nowadays.
Well, no. that goes back to the Lorath topic. We don't want to go backwards.
We're not going to go backwards. In fact, we probably should go forwards. So why don't you wrap up the PvP topic and we'll continue on.
Okay, basically, PvP is this. You either have GMs butting heads against each other, not in such a negative way.
Well,
but
we've already gone over what PvP is. Why don't you say a couple of words about positive words about PvP?
Well, PvP can be a tool which can be used in a plot to determine an uncertain outcome, which is purely reliant upon the player character's capabilities of taking hold of a situation. And
well, it's more of the player's ability to describe the player characters.
Yeah, it's one of the most intimate ways of describing a character's behaviors, because you need to really put yourself in your character's shoes above most other scenes.
I would say that also really tends to hinder players, though, wouldn't you think? That a player who, you know, is playing a character and they're not necessarily as tactically sound as the character should be, or, you know, there's a lot of, now the character isn't as good as described because it's got the player behind it.
Well, that's when you take your time, think over your post, and ask the GM to fudge it a little.
Yeah, but and there you get. You need to have a GM or moderator. I'm just saying, thank you for coming on and talking about PvP, but yeah. I don't think you've really convinced me of it being a viable. There you go. I'm not going to come away with the Sarpcast going, man, that Doc is a fucking idiot, but...
Yeah. You have to have a taste of it. It's like, don't knock it till you try it, you know? Be sure to try it with Loop, though.
All right, well, let's move on. We've gone through our discussion topic, so...
Yeah.
Since it looks like just about every other faction is ramping up in their activity, I can tell that you're chomping at the bit to get some more action for your own dealings there, Doc. So why don't you tell us about the plot you've picked this week for Pimp Your Plot?
Well, I have kind of obviously picked the Lorath Matriarchy for pimping my plot.
You know what? And I want to say, it wasn't that obvious. I had thought that you might pick the Maris. But considering that those are the only two things that you're a part of, if you had picked anything other than those two, then I guess I would have really been surprised.
Yeah, because just about the only other thing to pick would be the Phoenix or the Miharu. Or the Freedom. Well, either way. Point is, I'm going to pimp my plot right here. Lorath Matriarchy, we've been talking about the earlier part of this broadcast. And, we're in need of players. We need players to fill in military roles, civilian roles, or even roles within the UOC.
Is this going to be like the recent Niplezlian senator thing going on?
What happened with the Niplezlian senator?
You should pay more attention to the site.
so should you.
It's so true. It's really so true. They put out a call for players to play senators in the Niplezlian Senate. And they're doing some RP there of I actually don't know what, because I haven't really though I know it's going on, I'm not sure of the particulars.
pots and kettles, man. Pots and kettles.
Yeah, exactly. But so I'm not sure exactly what they're deliberating, but they are having activity. So I mean, is it that sort of thing where you're gonna, you just want players to come in, play a part of some grand like project like that, or is it just you'd like more people to play? I mean, what is the Lorath Matriarchy in terms of a plot?
Well, at this time, it is mostly, how do I best put it? It's currently, the social and military interactions of Lorath between one another and their UOC counterparts and preparations for a war that they hope doesn't happen.
All right, so let's say I'm a player that's listening in on the show, and for I don't God knows what reason, the Lorath seem interesting to me. Ignore any characters that I may have made. and I want to get in on this Lorath Matriarchy thing. Like, what is there, what is the steps? What is there for me to do? What am I looking at here?
Well, okay, first things first, read about them as best you can.
Oh, sure. Okay, so first things first, write about them. So people have something to read.
Or there's the other option, ask me a question. I'm always handy, almost always.
Well, let's say you're not on. I mean...
Someone's
listening to the show after we're done and we've gone to sleep. They want to know what is needed in the Lorath Matriarchy, characters. I mean, do you want people just to make random, Joes?
Well, okay, at this point,
James?
On our wiki page, yeah, there's actually a part where there's a wiki page that's complete. down at the bottom, under the character creation guide heading, positions available. We need private ship captains. People who want to come into the matriarchy and actually take over a ship and maybe be a small-time GM.
There's okay, so you're looking for GMs then?
Yes.
To run Lorath plots.
We're looking for some plots.
This isn't pimp your plot, it's pimp your need for people to run plots.
Pimp my faction is more like it. Pimp my faction, pimp my race.
Well, because I know you do, I know there is some sort of plot because you make a plot audit and you do have things posted in the Lorath Matriarch, like RPs being posted.
So, yeah, I mean, currently it's the royal family. Mind you, we do need some potentially well-skilled individuals to play some royalty children that we may be having soon, since Tiff is back and can RP out the queen having said children. Thing about Lorath children is they do come out relatively matured.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
I mean, because I know that Neko give birth to, I can't even think of their name, younglings, which are
miniature basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Little chibi Neko.
Well, the thing about Lorath hatchlings is that they...
Wait, do they lay eggs?
Yes, they lay eggs.
See, I didn't even know that.
They well, if we would have dwelled on the Lorath topic, we would have...
Well, no, I'm just saying that this... Like this is just something else that it's like I have written and had Lorath characters approved, like,
but you didn't
and I did know that Halatio have live birth though.
Yeah, they're live birth. They're mammals. They are full blown mammals. But
that's what I was pretty sure because they were described as being like monkeys and they have monkey tails, even though I tend to forget that their tail is
prehensile. Yeah. So they can use their tail for all sorts of things, but
like closing doors.
Yeah, like closing doors.
And I had just really forgotten about it at that time too.
But Lorath do lay eggs, and first there is the initial impregnating, then the egg gestates, then they lay the egg, and then they nurse the egg. You know, keep it warm, blah blah blah, for a good.
Well, let's talk more about pimping your plot here.
Yeah, well, anyway, we need...
So I guess if you're interested in laying eggs, join the Lorath.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get an insurge of characters now. Yes!
Everyone wants to lay eggs.
that goes in the changing room, most definitely.
You know what? I've been having too much fun with the Sarpcast, I'm telling you.
We do need people to come in. We also need Lorath Self-Defense Force personnel. We need soldiers. We need people behind the guns. You can also serve on UOC ships, in fact. So if you do make a Lorath, you can serve on a UOC post.
Well, and the Lorath have been, like you said before, part of Yamatai previously, and really all over the universe. So there's few plots that a Lorath might not, you know, that a Lorath would not fit into.
Well, at this time, though, the Lorath have a very distinctive negative opinion of the Yamatai Empire.
Well, so there's the Ochistans, right? Who
actually split because they hate the Empire.
The Empire.
The Yamataian Empire.
Oh, that's that. There was that. Okay.
Yeah, see, that's Lorath like them.
I still maintain that there could be a Lorath, you know, some enterprising person could make a Lorath who's, for some reason, still with the Empire.
Maybe. You know? There is a stretch. There was actually a Halatio character made within the Empire. Was done by Lynn, or I forgot what... Oh, yeah, Lay. Lynn, and she made a Halatio, which actually served on a ship for a while, and actually was hell-bent on bringing harm to the matriarchy because of his previously enslaved status.
Oh, and you know what? I totally missed that question.
Yes, you missed the question.
And I've got it sitting right here looking at me, too. I think we just got into too much. I mean, because the Lorath segment was pretty long, but I've got to ask, and going to come late in the show, and I've totally messed up the entire format, but I have to ask. The Lorath did used to have slavery. They enslaved the Halatio. What happened to that? Because that was something that was really unique about the Lorath race.
Well, the thing is, we could look over the slave history, but what happened with the slaves was we got absorbed into the Empire. That's pretty much it. The Empire at the time had a law stating that no sentient being may be enslaved for a period longer than 7 years. And so the matriarchy had to...
Which was the amount of time of service that Aneko had to had to serve in the army, right?
Isn't that great? But
So why after the split did they not go back? Because it seems like something that... Because, I mean, I have personal knowledge that some slavery does still go on.
I'll explain this.
Okay.
So Lorath took several routes with this. When they were absorbed into the Empire, they decided to keep some slaves as they are for the 7-year duration. Mm-hmm. They also used a bit of semantics here. They decided to label Halatio as adopted immigrant workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which will be exported for the purpose of giving them a home. It was so compassionate. It worked beautifully.
All right, so the deal is that they still have slavery.
No.
It's just a different name?
No, it's imported immigrant workers. They are paid. That's a key point. They need to be paid either in actual monetary funds or room and board. And it is part of a contractual obligation that be taken care of. They're not going to be sold to the Mishu for being eaten, for example. Because that would be very bad.
Now I really want to roleplay a Mishu who is adopting a bunch of Halatio.
Which would actually be a very viable roleplay. But, yes, there is a certain... position which the Halatio still are in, which places them in a subservient role. But mind you, we didn't readopt slavery in proper after the split to the UOC because the UOC has this freedom charter, basically.
Oh, because then you guys joined up with the UOC.
Yeah, and basically a few senators cried that they didn't want slavery, and the Lorath had to say, hey, these guys want to be this way. And... don't tell us what the hell to do because they're wanting it. And after an interview with the Prime Minister and the Lorath royalty, it was agreed that the Lorath are not in fact slavers so much as keeping the
mass adopters.
Yeah, basically. That's it. They send them out to be adopted. It's like Russian mail order brides, kind of, you know?
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for answering the question.
Before I completely kill your format, let's go on.
We've already. Don't worry. Format's already been destroyed.
Awesome!
Well, because normally this is when we would do our Post of the Week segment, but unfortunately, I went to go retrieve the Post of the Week, and my laptop was. And the whole kitchen. Was just covered in haggis.
Didn't the haggis smell really good, though?
Oh, I loved it streaming down my face.
Oh,
creamy.
It was delicious. Haggis right. Everywhere.
So instead, this week, we're doing a new segment, which is the Character Spotlight. And this will be a segment where the guests will talk about a favorite character on the site, what makes them special in their eyes. And this is a way to not only highlight the player of the character as being someone who has made a significant contribution to the site in that this character is so well known, but it also is a way, you know, is a way for people to look at the character who either maybe they haven't heard of the character, so we might get some dark horses in here, or it'll be a way to say, well, this is a good character and this is why, and maybe people can pick up some hints on why that character is getting the recognition. So for our very first ever Character Spotlight, and this I'm actually not actually really sure because we only kind of touched on this during the pre-show, but who will you pick for the very first Character Spotlight?
Well, I actually pick a character played by Sorezu, mm-hmm. which is named Lilius. She is
a Sorcian, right?
Yeah, she's a young little Sorcian. Well, young in relative terms. She's actually... I think several thousand years old, if I recall, or several hundred, mm-hmm. many numbers. But
lots of numbers.
lots of numbers, man. Them numbers. But, well, see, the character was originally developed as a sort of, experimental weapon character, but has developed to be more of a character that's going to have a lot of future depth and a lot of development in regard to plot because of the unique nature of the character. This character originally started in Ochistan Research Facility, which the Lorath Matriarchy was raiding. This is after the split, of course. And the character was found to be a lab specimen, which was very chaotic, very disgruntled, and it went about single-handedly defeating AMX model powered armor and infiltrating the body of a Jiayuan character named, which one was it? Tai, yes. Tai, which is the daughter of Yuriko. That's right. But back to the point. So the Lilius character infiltrates Tai and absorbs a portion of Tai's characteristics and personality quirks and whatnot. And after this, the character took on a very distinctive sort of development trend of being more personable, well, more personable than eating them on sight.
But what do you like about this character? I mean, the history is good to know about the character, but what do you feel is really unique and special about this character?
Potential. That's the key point. There is a large potential for this character. The character can go on to be a simple killer, but the way that Sorazu's taking the character indicates that she will grow to have a very distinctive depth and potential to her. And that
so you like the so it's the development really that you yes. that you like about the character. You like the way that Sorazu has developed the character from this origin as a weapon to I assume someone who's more personable.
Well, personable is part of it. She's also trying to balance between who she is, which is a weapon by design, and who she could be, which is a sentient, self-supporting life form. Now, that is a very interesting topic to myself.
All right, so you like the sort of
duality
storytelling ideals that come about with this character and the right,
Not to mention, she actually has been compared to Yui, actually, as a potential match in combatant capability.
So you like that this character is a very
badass.
Powerful in character. Huh.
Very badass.
It's very interesting. I think that shed some light on...
Yeah.
On more than just the character's personality.
Well, it's just a little quirk that's rather fascinating.
But thank you for helping me test out my new segment here.
Can't oh yeah, spotlight. No problem.
We're nearing the 80-minute mark. So
awesome.
We're gonna have to cut it here.
Okay.
That's it for SARPcast episode 7. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys again in a week where the discussion topics will be how to determine your character's cup size by grabbing your own man boobs, and where the heck Star has been for the last 3 weeks. Seriously, guy, where are you?
Thanks for having me. Oh, too soon.
Glad. it's fine. We were glad to have you here. Thank you very much for filling in today.
No problem.
And to our listeners, have fun, and please send us any topics you'd like to see us cover. And please remember to vote for SARP once a day, every day.